I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope.
You're standing at the door with a bowl of candy. Why can't you?
Because I don't think 17-year-old girls with no costume on. They didn't have a costume on. You shouldn't be allowed.
Who cares?
They were just using Halloween to get candy.
Who cares? It's Halloween.
I do. You
just give them candy.
Just use the holiday for your own selfish purposes.
And the bulldog.
So you'd rather have them toilet paper your house?
Well, I didn't know that it was going to be felony a treat. I don't think the trick extended to felonies.
Why would it kill you just to give them a few pieces of candy? I don't understand that. Should there be?
Well,
who cares?
Well, they're going to be 40? Trick-or-treating at 40?
What are they supposed to do?
Try a free candy? I'm 40 years old.
On WGR.
I don't have a lot of experience with vampires, but I have hunted werewolves. I shot one once, but by the time I got to it, it had turned back into my neighbor's dog.
Sports Radio 550.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Shope here at the station. Sneaky Joe is with me. Bulldog's in his attic playing guitar, taking requests, telling stories, drinking beer. Right. I don't know.
Maybe
tomorrow.
No beer. It is. You know. I think you know. I think we're very similar in this way. On a day where you're just sort of hanging around the house, and you know, if it's a day off, you know, you're sort of always sort of cognizant of the time and thinking, okay, I don't know when can I, like there are no real rules, but you still feel sort of compelled to not just be drinking at 10:30 in the morning because you have the day off. You know, like it's just not that might not end well. That's starting to be a thing for me as these days unfold. I think I mentioned the other day, I love a nice bright day. There's a lot of good natural light up here where I am. And I come up here at, you know, 2 o'clock to kind of start getting ready and, you know, play a little guitar. And the fridge is just like
staring at you.
It's growing. And I think it's getting larger. Like it's just like, hey, I'm over here. Remember, you got that delivery last week. I'm still pretty chock full.
Yeah, I'm getting larger. I don't know about that fridge. My fridge isn't getting larger. I am. So we'll see. Keep us posted on that.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
We'll talk to Sal Capaccio later this hour. He was in on the Brandon Bean comments, hearing Bean there say he did recon on Stephon Diggs. So did we back at the trade deadline. We were asking about him, too. And it'll be interesting to talk to Sal. We'll wait to get into this, but that the term the Bills use, I can remember Sean McDermott using it at the deadline, was irresponsible. They did not want to make an irresponsible trade. And so, like, really, you know, I accept their description, Bean's description of it all, but it's like, you know, somebody they might have wanted, the team wouldn't trade him within the conference, and you just heard it. I want to explore that a little bit because, you know, it's not the same thing. As you know, as good of a job as I think he's doing and they're doing, it's not the same thing to just say, like, you wanted something as it is to get it and, you know, put it out there. And they did lose a playoff game kind of tragically by, you know, not having a player like this, you can say. I mean, you could certainly say that a decent receiver would have made a big difference in that game.
You know, easily could have. You don't know for sure. But, yeah, I mean, you could assert it. I mean, they threw the ball, what, 10 times at Duke Williams, who dressed for, what, 5 or 6 games all year? So, you know, that it just sort of – I think that That total of targets at a guy who did not play even half the games this year for the Bills, I think sort of amplified the shortcomings on offense. You know, like how fully formed are you on offense if in a playoff game, win or go home, your quarterback is choosing to throw the ball to that guy 10 times? I mean, I can appreciate that Reed's led him to that and whatever, but still, you know, and there were a couple of balls there that were catchable that he didn't catch. You know, there was one in the end zone I think maybe he even should have had. So, you know, it's not as easy as just like assume Stephon Diggs is in that spot, but I don't know. It's close to that,
well,
isn't it?
you couldn't get Stephon Diggs. I accept that. I accept that the Bills did not have the opportunity to trade for him. It sounds like they had different ideas and made plenty of calls. I certainly accept that. But that, you know, what, a first-round pick might have been the price. You can't go higher than that. So a first-round pick might have been the price for a lesser receiver, and maybe the Bills consider that irresponsible. That's fine. Maybe it's likely that Diggs is better than whoever that player is. We really don't know who the player is, but it's maybe likely that Diggs is better. But you don't have him last season. Whoever it was, you chose to keep the draft pick, which was of no value to you in that playoff game.
And it did. Go ahead.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. It did come across to me, and like you said, I don't know how far you want to get into this conversation now. We got Sal coming up in a few minutes to get more into it. But it came across to me in one of the comments that I saw being explaining the trade and the timing of the trade that the uncertainty of the offseason seems to have played a part in their decision to do it, to pay the first round price, because I think he said something to the effect of the likelihood of, you know, no offseason work and a player showing up here that you draft with the 22nd pick, or even if you packaged up what you had and try to move up, the likelihood of that player being fully formed enough to help your offense as much as Stephon Diggs will if there's no offseason work was unlikely. So maybe the urgency of the situation, you know, in the country or in the world sort of played a part in them, you know, in the timing of giving up that first round pick.
Well, I also can accept that logic, and that's pretty bright if they thought that that would be, you know, that was part of the strategy, I would say. So good for them on that. Again, Sal coming up. We'll talk to him in about 20 minutes. Did you happen to read my Sabres thing?
I did. I loved it.
You did. Did I get anything wrong? Did I remember anything differently than you do? If you can remember that now.
Yeah, no. There was nothing that stood out. I mean, you know, you were accurate in saying I was not a fan of Derrick Roy. I mean,
that's
it was
right.
Polite.
I wrote this whole thing and then went back, and I guess I was pretty fired up when I wrote it, and then smartly, I would say, went back and toned a few things down.
Okay.
Like, that was one of the things I toned down.
Oh, okay. Was there maybe like a quote from me in there about Derrick Roy?
No, but, you know, like, I wasn't checking with you to see if it was all right, like, what I wrote there. And, you know, I just wanted to soften a little bit. So I'm glad that was okay. But, you know, when it came to Gostad or Talinder or Drury, guys that we talked to once.
Yeah.
Gostad was more than once. But anything like that.
No, those are all like I remember the conversation with Goss. I don't remember the location. I remember being a few different places with him. Dr. Reeb's office once out in East Amherst, I think, was another place we did a show on location with Gostad. But I do remember that conversation about Tony Romo and going on vacation and him just being like bitterly offended by the notion of that was okay. So I totally remember that. I don't remember what you said about Talinder, and I don't remember him on the Maple Leafs. That happened?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. People
tell me right away when I've made even like gotten one letter wrong. So
well, I didn't check or anything. I didn't go to his hockey reference page or anything. I looked at that and went like, I don't remember that at all.
He did.
I remember
him
coming back here with Myers later on, like in 2011 or maybe something like that.
He didn't play for the Leafs. He played for the Devils for 3 years and the Sabres.
Not even in the preseason?
Maybe there's a... I'll have to go to Wikipedia for that. Maybe, yeah, there's like a PTO type deal with him. But...
Did he get hurt in the preseason or something? Well, he does not have regular season games with the Leafs, so...
Okay.
He 2014 signed a tryout with the Toronto Maple Leafs, suffered an injury in a preseason game against the Sabres.
Against the Sabres,
There you are then. All right, so...
I'm not sure that should count, but... Anyway,
yeah,
well, maybe I won't change it.
You saw him in a Toronto uniform, and you had that recollection, and so, like, I mean, that at least works.
This is also, did Vince Young play for the Bills?
Right. Yeah, that's right. He probably didn't play for the Leafs if it was only in the preseason. Anybody that's coming up that gets a preseason game can't, I don't know, can they? Like, in a certain way, they can't. And didn't one of the Stalls got hurt in a preseason game against the Sabres once?
Jordan Staal, I think, broke his leg in a preseason game because I was there. Ooh, too,
something bad.
I should abolish these useless preseason games. No good comes from
them. They should. We don't need them.
Anything else? I don't remember. I was definitely Team Drury. You were Team Briere.
Yep.
And I've grown to like and admire Briere more than I did. I never disliked him. I just, you know, it's one of those things where you're choosing a side. So, okay, I'm on Team Drury. So that was correct. Like, your portrayal of that, I would say, was accurate.
I don't want to poke at Drury's considered importance to that team and the room and everything like that. I mean, that was a big part of the deal. He also scored like crazy. Like, he was a scorer, too, but... Like, that was the mystique about Drury was perhaps out of proportion. I don't know. Maybe not. But I wasn't really, like, focused on that then or smacking that around then. I mean, like, I might be now. You know, like, in 2005, I was not here to, you know, question his leadership. Not at all. I just thought very highly of Briere and, like, all the stuff that I care about now for hockey, I probably didn't really care about then. You know, I'd want to know from Briere and any other player on the team, I'd want to know their possession stuff. I'd want to know their zone starts. Life was simpler then. And, you know, not worse. not worse.
No, I
wonder how good that team was in terms of analytics. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Some of the guys who, like Chad, some of the guys who are out there with all that information game to game in present day, have done some work on some of these games. And next week, they're showing the Flyer series.
Right, the four wins.
The four wins. Yeah. So, I don't know. I wonder if they'll do that for those games. But I could see myself watching all of those games.
Me too. I have sort of, the last two nights, I've kind of gotten lost in other stuff. Like, the kids are just sort of, you know, well, I mean, all day they're just sort of doing what they're doing, and then I'm doing this for a few hours in the afternoon, and they have, my sense has been, just by them sort of sitting in the living room and asking, what do you want to watch, that they sort of want to hang out, you know? So, and Leo not being a hockey fan, we've been just watching movies the last couple of nights, and we've only caught the very end of the games that have been on. Like, I saw the shootouts the last two nights, and I'm glad I did, because they were pretty memorable. But I haven't sat with the games the last couple of nights. I think next week I will probably ramp back into that. I may even, tonight's a Toronto game that I may want to sit with too, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm excited they're going to show all the wins from that first round series against Philly.
Yeah, me too. Vanek shootout goal, like, it's just, not only is there that move that he was famous for, but the way the net just catches the puck and the goalie,
the
Hasek does not move.
Yeah, the sound is of it, like, that goal. There's a very unique. I don't know if it hits that bar.
It's
in
a thud.
Behind. Yeah, right. It's not like it's not the usual sound of a puck hitting one of the metal pipes. It's like a dull sort of. It's very cool. It's a very cool and unique sound. That's why I said I'm glad we were there for it. Like, Owen saw him do that move the night before and said, damn, that's like a today move. He said, yeah. And I said, I think Vanek sort of invented that.
Yeah.
He was the first guy we ever saw make that move. He's also the first guy in a shootout I ever remember walking in and getting, like, to the hash marks and winding up and taking a slap shot.
Those were great, too. I like those more.
It was just like, man, is there a bigger middle finger move than that?
Right,
just
I know.
Walking into the slot and, like, I am blowing your face off right here. Here it is.
What's great about it is that you look terrible if you miss.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The other one, all right, it's a little fancy, but if you miss, you know, it's sort of like, you got to come up with something. This one, you go to the top of the circle or the slot, like you go to there and just wind up and shoot, you better score.
Yeah, if you hit his pads, it's probably bouncing up over your head out to center ice. Right? Like if you miss like that, and then if you miss hitting the boards or the glass, it's just going to be painfully loud and just super embarrassing. It's a very it's a very all or nothing move.
How do you feel about the slap shot in close? Like, this is not really for me to say, but the little hockey I grew up playing, I was usually the goalie. And that was like such a jerk move, the slap shot in close. You know, like, isn't it? I'm not saying the Vanek thing is the same, the same thing. But isn't there a little bit of a, I don't know, I haven't thought about this in a long time. Isn't there sort of a little bit of a code that, violation there?
I don't know at the pro level, but I think when you're playing street hockey, spent plenty of time playing goalie there, or, you know, I don't know if I want to even say youth hockey, because to me, the higher level of competition you get to, the more acceptable I would say it would be. Maybe later I'll ask. I don't have another headset, so I can't bring Owen on to ask him, but he might tell you, I'm just going to guess here, that he doesn't mind and maybe even prefers it because it's likely to be a less accurate shot. So, with the way guys can shoot wrist shots now, mm-hmm. like Vanek's wrist shot last night, and certainly like Jack and Olsson and like whatever, hundreds of guys that can really shoot it, you know, the accuracy and the velocity and how deceptive you can be with it is more of a challenge than just the raw power of a slap shot, which is it's maybe a little bit like hitting a driver off the tee as opposed to going with a 3 or a 5 wood or even a 3 iron. You know, your chance at having it go badly maybe is a little higher.
Okay, right. All right, Joe, so, but, you agree?
I agree. I think if you're playing for anything, the slap shot in close is fine. But if you're street hockey or if you're playing pickup with your guys or it's like bar league, then you can't do that. You might have a problem.
Which is why, Joe, I think that it was probably really, really awesome that 2 springs ago when we were practicing for the 11-day power play and Owen was in goal and you and I were playing against him, I think it was you, very late in the going of that like 3-hour session or whatever we did, you fed me and I was right around like the middle of the circle and I had to go on down on like one leg to get the pass, but I wound up and cranked it and it went high and wide and just missed his head.
Nice.
That probably wasn't the best. Like, I'm the guy that is subjecting my kid to this in the first place, and a part of me is like, boy, I sure hope nothing bad happens. I hope some cowboy doesn't try to, oh, here's the kid who's drafted in the OHL, I'll show him. And as it turns out, his dad is that guy. Yeah. Just because I cannot control my competitiveness. I'm like, I got a chance to score on Owen. Joe, crank it, idiot.
Down, I remember that, down on one knee, like Steven Stamkos out there. Yeah.
Oh, it was horrible. Oh, if there were video of that, that would be the end of me. Because I'm sure I fell. I'm sure it looked like, so you're saying look Steven Stamkos, and it probably looked like Steven Stamkos with skates on the wrong feet. It was so bad, but that's really what I was going for. Yeah.
Well, my favorite thing about this column is the personal stuff, like where we talk to certain guys in this job. Like, it's not 100% a fan, it's some percent a fan, but you know, you're doing interviews and you're being honest about them, so it's not like full fan mode, but you're sitting with different guys and remembering them from different places, and a couple of these are not good memories for me. The Connolly one was like, oh my god, I cannot believe I just did that. In the same Terrence McGee, also, I had that same sort of walk-away reaction, but it wasn't the same thing. It was like, so Connolly, this was at, they called it Aces and Blades.
Yeah.
Remember that? It was a charity Sabres Foundation blackjack or poker night or something, and like all the players were there. This is 5:06. All the players were there, and I had been on ESPN that day, and CC Sabathia was on the show. And he, I'm not going to remember, but we had some conversation about like being close to winning and not winning or something like that. And I saw Connolly, and I've always like admired Connolly in a certain way. Just kind of sympathize with him. Like as soon as he's, Pekka is traded for Tim Connolly and he's like 19 or 18 even maybe. He was 19 years old, whatever. And like, he's got to be Pekka or else. And like, I was here for the beginning of that and it was kind of nasty toward him a little bit. The team stopped winning and it's just like not good. So I've always wanted to be a little bit, have felt a little bit of sympathy for him. And so in this moment, I'm drinking probably. In this moment, I'm there with my wife at this Aces and Blades where like everybody's socializing and I just went up to him. And you know, we knew who, he knew who I was. I introduced myself to him if he didn't. And I just started telling him about Sabathia. Like we're standing across from each other. He is walking somewhere and I stopped him to talk to him. And he is listening to me go on and I couldn't get out of the story. I'm like just telling him, I'm probably bragging a little bit. Like I had just done this ESPN show and I had CC Sabathia. Do you know who that is? And we talked about baseball. And then I said this other, we had this other conversation and it reminded me of you and the Sabres and all this other. And I just, you're in, this happens. Like you get into a thing and you just can't get out of it. So eventually I just stopped talking and he's like, oh, that's interesting or whatever. And then he's like, all right, see ya. And I'm like, oh my God. And my wife's like, what were you doing? I just wanted to interact with him like anybody else there would have wanted to.
Right. So, I was digging a hole with Tim Connolly that I could never get out of. That's what I was doing.
Yes. Right. And then, so she was sitting with me last night when I was writing. And I got to Hesht, who's down on the list because of his jersey number. And I got to Hesht, and I'm like, it's the time at the same party when I introduced her to him and told him that she had lived in Germany because she played tennis in Germany one summer. And so he starts to ask her, you know, very friendly. He starts to ask her something about that. And I'm like, yeah, she speaks German, you know, like... She did. And then he starts to speak German and she's like lost and embarrassed, you know, because like, she speaks German like I speak French, you know, like I can maybe get a sentence out here and there and just sort of do it. But it was just like, you know, are you going to write that? Like, yes, I'm going to write that because that was me putting you in a bad spot. So that's my, that's the Hesht one.
Right. I like, you know, just. What I maybe a lot of people like did the same thing that I ended up doing with this. I mean, of course, you know, I work with you and I mentioned there, like you said, a couple times in a couple of these memories, but it also spun me off into thinking about other memories that like we share with, you know, different guys. And like I remember maybe it probably was the second time I ever talked to you on the air was. From the first time was when you first came over to the station and I was in my backyard on my, just I called you on my landline and was like welcomed you to WGR or something and it was like I don't remember like that I remember feeling like I wanted that to go better than it did or something at the time but whatever the second time would have been right after Drury had been traded to Buffalo. He came to town and I got to play golf with him in the Sabre alumni golf tournament.
Okay.
And so I played 18 holes with Drury. I mean, it was awesome. And, you know, I wouldn't say I got to know him real well. I doubt he even remembers it or would remember me from it, I could say. But after that was over, I went out front, like we finished up our round of golf, and before dinner, I called, you were on, Chuck wasn't there, maybe he was already gone by then, I don't remember the timing, probably, because this is summer of 2003, and by the fall, you and I are working together, but I called you to just talk about how cool Drury was, and how on a closest to the pin, he shot last, and everybody was pretty close, but he still got within like 3 feet or something, and like, he's so competitive, you know?
Yes.
I remember that phone call from Transit Valley.
I don't, but I love it. And I want to ask another thing later about golf with Chris Drury, who I never got to know at all. Next, though, Sal Capaccio. We'll talk about the Stephon Diggs trade and what we learned from Bills GM Brandon Bean in a lengthy Q&A with reporters today.
Indeed. Right now, I am here to talk to you about your lawn again. It's Mr. Lawn Care season, folks. Time to love your lawn.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On up, you're tired of trying to make your lawn look green and weed-free, yet it never seems to work. Well, my advice for this coming season is to call Mr. Lawn Care. They're locally owned experts and have them help restore your lawn to become lush, green, weed-free, and healthy. Stop trying to do it yourself and let the lawn care specialists at Mr. Lawn Care make you and your lawn look so good this year. Mr. Lawn Care has a fantastic offer right now to get you started. If you invest in 4 lawn treatments, they'll kick in another one for free. You heard it right, buy 4 lawn care treatments from Mr. Lawn Care right now and get one more for free only at Mr. Lawn Care. Stop tying up precious weekends instead of doing something you might actually enjoy and let Mr. Lawn Care take care of your lawn. And when they do, we bet you're going to love your lawn again. Call and ask about their buy 4, get one more for free offer right now. Restrictions apply. You can Facebook Mr. Lawn Care and inbox them there or call 683-LAWN today. That's 683-LAWN for Mr. Lawn Care.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
All right, let's figure out what we learned from the Bills general manager, Brandon Bean, today in a lengthy Q&A. Sal Capaccio joins us now. He was present for it. Hi, Sal.
Hi, guys.
Was this scheduled, or was this coming, or was it just sort of a let's just do this today kind of a deal? And how did they pull it off? Zoom?
Yeah, it was a Zoom conference, and Brandon Bean even made a joke and said that he wished he had bought stock in Zoom a month ago, considering all the Zoom conferences he's doing now with staff and players or whatever. It was kind of funny. But, yeah, you know, we kind of knew that we were going to start getting something coming down the chute here, but we didn't know exactly when. And I'm sure that on their end, the Bills PR and the organization, they wanted to make sure they had everything in order. And yesterday we got Isaiah McKenzie via a Zoom conference. My guess is that was a nice trial run. You know what I mean? Make sure that all went well before we get the GM, because then we got word last night, we got word that we'd have Brandon Bean at 11 a.m. today. And, you know, pretty much the regular local Buffalo media contingent was there. And some people had their videos on, some people didn't. And Brandon Bean had a nice virtual background as if he was standing right in one of the sections of New Era Field.
Is he home, by the way? Sorry, is he?
No,
is he...
I think he's at work at the stadium. I'm not sure. He said he's been spending a lot more time at home, but the virtual background, I'm not sure if he was actually home or at the stadium. We never asked him that. That's a good question. But they're doing a lot of things, obviously, remotely, as we all are right now.
Mm-hmm. Did it surprise you how long that went? Like, it was more than an hour, right?
You know, on one hand, it did. On one hand, it didn't. I think that, you know, considering that, you know, when we get him in these – like a combine or Senior Bowl, we're only going to get like 15 minutes or so. There's just a scrum. Everybody's right. Sticking a microphone in. This is a much more relaxed setting. He's just sitting there by himself. He's got some time. He's able to talk to us. It's just the Buffalo media. It's not national. And we haven't heard from him in a long time as well. Plus, you know, around this time of year, we usually do get him and or Sean McDermott, you know, for a nice length of time to talk about the draft. And since we haven't heard from him in a while, I think because it was going so well, they probably did plan on it going for about an hour, but always knew that, hey, if, you know, things go off the rails, we can always shut it down. But I think the way that it went, it was really well done and organized that obviously they felt comfortable letting him keep going. And Brandon's been always good about that, you know, willing to answer more questions. He's good in front of a microphone. He's good answering the questions that we give him.
It's not really important where he was. It's just could have been anywhere. Like, I saw that
sure.
the Saints are having their meetings at a brewery that the owner, Gail Benson, the wife of the late Tom Benson, owns. So they're having their meetings there. You know, 716 is closed and everything, all these places. I wonder if they would just do something like that or whatever, if they're not allowed to be at the stadium. I'm not sure.
Was actually asked about that today.
About what?
About having a, you know, the Saints and doing it at the brewery and things like that. He was actually asked, like, what could happen in that regard and, you know, how much things might change. And basically he's said that they don't really know what's going on and they're looking at all different options and what they need to do as far as meetings and where to be and when to be and, you know, trying to do everything they can and stay in front of all this.
Yeah, it's right. Like, that's interesting for draft preparation. We've explained and talked about, and so did Bean today, in terms of Diggs, like how strategy might be different this year in terms of bringing in new players. We had Connor Rogers on the other day, and I didn't get to this question for him, but he made the point that the undrafted free agents after this draft might be an unusually good crop, because a lot of this, you know, work to figure out how to separate prospects in the draft isn't happening in the same way. So you might see guys fall through the cracks, so to speak, that would have been drafted. So that'll be interesting too.
Yeah, and I'll go back to, you know, a point I made with you guys a while back, which is, if you're a buttoned up organization, if you're an organization that is really good with your personnel staff and developing relationships with college coaches and having everything organized, and you've been on top of things since August, September of last year through the college football season, you're going to be ahead of the game here. I think the teams that have the newer coaches and newer front offices are at a big disadvantage this offseason because they don't have that continuity. They're getting to know each other, some of these people. You think about a guy like Matt Rhule in Carolina. You know, now he was in college football. He'll have a good knowledge base of some of the players, but he wasn't out there scouting. He didn't have a staff out there scouting. You know, and you have to think about who's in their front office. Do they have those people? Like, how are they in concert with what the team is looking for? So I think the Bills here in this regard, as opposed to many years past, because of how well organized they are, how buttoned up they are, and the fact that they've had a lot of good continuity in their front office for the last few years under Brandon Bean, I think they're going to be ahead of the game. That I don't think they're worried about, you know, making mistakes here because they don't have an ability to bring players in. Whereas I think a lot of teams are probably shivering and saying, oh my gosh, how do we know exactly who we're getting here?
Well, that might be how you end up with kind of thinking about the point that Mike just mentioned, that Connor mentioned with us. You know, once you get to like fifth, sixth, seventh round, a tipping point for teams might be, well, we talked to that guy, and he checked all our boxes. This other guy, we never got to sit with an interview. We didn't get a visit in with him at all. And, you know, who knows what he is off the field. Not to say you can know for sure anyways, because, you know, guys are going to put up the best front they can in those situations. But still, that's a part of this that might be missing for some guys, and that's where the cracks might seep in.
No doubt about that. There's actually a flip side to this, and some people that I've read believe that there could be teams that make less mistakes because it only takes one good interview for a guy to blow a team away when he's on his best behavior and he's been coached up, right? Where you might say, oh, well, we don't know about this guy. You bring him in, you're like, oh, yeah, we fell in love with him, when maybe you shouldn't have, but because he put on a good act and he was able to be coached up and say the right things, you know, you put him up on your board. So I just think it's a... the way this is going to go is going to be super interesting, obviously.
Sal Capaccio with us. So what did we learn today about the Bills' pursuit of Diggs? How close they might have come to acquiring not him probably, but some other receiver at the trade deadline mid-season, and how they got this done?
Yeah, he said they actually inquired about Stephon Diggs last year. And then Minnesota at the time really wasn't interested in trading him. And they basically said, look, we just gave him a contract extension. We're not dealing him. And then he indicated that he circled back with them. He didn't say exactly when. I got the sense it was right after this season, maybe. And it was interesting how he put it. He said, quote, it didn't seem like a definitive 100% no. And I think that just opened the door for them to say, okay, let's kind of go down this road. Then as they got closer to free agency and the legal tampering window opened, basically, that's when the Bills started going and looking at some of the other options. Now, we also know because of what Emmanuel Sanders said on Rich Eisen's show the other day that that's what they were doing. They were looking at other options, and they were keeping in contact with the Vikings about Diggs. And then Bean basically said that the Vikings were under a little bit of pressure. They were getting antsy because they did have other teams involved, and they kind of knew they had to kind of do something before teams were dropping out of this thing. And that's when the ultimate phone call made, and they kind of wrapped it up in about a 20 to 30 minute window there when they finally got to the decision point.
Did you come away with the same impression I did? I feel like Bean almost basically said that the potential for this offseason to be non-existent, truncated, whatever it ends up being, played a part in them paying the price of a first-round pick to get a finished product as opposed to drafting someone who's going to have to learn, what the NFL is really like and looking to get someone who might be impactful from the word go, even if they have half a training camp, say.
Absolutely, he did. He said he's considering their first round pick. And he said if he made a trade, he looked at the possibilities of trying to trade up. He felt that all he could really do was get to about 18 or 19 with what they were willing to give up and how all of that was working. And at 18 or 19, they were not going to get the type of impact player that Stephon Diggs would make. So that's why they figured he is basically their first round pick. And yes, with everything going on, you get a finished product in here, you get a guy that can make that big of an impact right away. And the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the offseason and possibly, less training camp, less time to be on the field, and the rookies and those guys, the time it takes for them to get acclimated was something he also brought up, which is obviously, it takes time for them to get up to speed. So, you have to think about all those things. I don't think that was the deciding factor. I do think it's a little piece of the puzzle. I think ultimately, to me, the getting to 18 or 19 and not getting an impact player, and we need a guy right now. And, if the Bills felt comfortable with what they had to give up, maybe to get to 6 or 7, maybe they think, okay, we're getting CeeDee Lamb or Jerry or Judy. I can get one of those guys, young guy, rookie contract. Maybe he doesn't make this deal. I think ultimately he makes the deal because he just felt, I'm not getting a guy that's going to walk onto this field next year and make the impact like Stephon Diggs at even 18 or 19. So I'm going to make this deal right now to get him.
Yeah, that will be interesting to watch in the future if some of these rookies, beyond even those two guys, like this Henry Ruggs could go top five. Mm-hmm. It seems like now they're talking like that, or at least be the first receiver picked possibly. I know I've heard also more than once that the Bills were soured on T. Higgins, who might have been an idea for them at their spot. And there would be other possible options too, but that's the thing. Like, I can, as I've said, I can sign off on this just fine. Like, when you're competing like this and you've got a pretty good team, you could even choose to couple it with what's happened to New England. You want to sell your first round pick for an impact player like this. Great. And I wouldn't argue against it philosophically. But, the money he's going to command versus what one of these rookies would have commanded is way different. And so, we'll see what it amounts to. It has to work, right? Like, we'll see what it amounts to if whoever, Higgins or Ruggs or any of these other guys, ends up being dynamite for someone else picked 22 or later.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, he was asked, by the way, we've talked about this, and Bulldog, you brought mm-hmm. it up when the trade was made, and, we brought it up since then about a guy like Stephon Diggs, and does he want another contract? Does that happen in a trade like this? I'll give you his quote, basically, is what he said was, I don't really like to get into contract stuff. It's just one of those things I'd rather not get into, but he's happy to be in Buffalo, and that's the best way that I can leave it. So he didn't shut the door on that possible happening. He didn't say they would or they wouldn't, but he indicated that as of right now, like this, it's not like an Antonio Brown situation, right? He's coming to Buffalo and all uh-huh. that, but he never said either way about if they have to revisit the contract situation.
I always want to know what I can about mechanics in these trades, and Bean is giving us plenty of opportunities to find out, because he's making so many moves. Here's a big one with Stephon Diggs. He said how they had a conversation, and then at like 9:45 on that night, they got to a point where they were able to hammer it out. And I just always wonder how that happens. Is that we're on the phone and I'm going to put you on hold to talk to my my group? Is it texts? Like, I trade with Joe. I text Joe, and then he texts me back. Like, is there some reason to think the NFL wouldn't do it that way? I mean, he probably isn't just making these decisions unilaterally. So he's got an idea about what a good price is. He turns to Sean McDermott and whoever else and then goes back to Minnesota. Do you know anything about how that goes?
The only thing I can tell you is from that article I did with Bean when I sat down with him a couple of years ago, if you remember, about the all the trades he made. And, you know, in that article, and what he told me was, now, and again, this may or may not happen in this particular situation, but he gets right to his contract guy, Jim Overdorf. They go over some things. They have to look at that situation as far as salary cap and all that. And in this situation, they wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't matter. We know they have enough room. But they also, they want to make sure on all that. But the other part is, each team has to make a call to the league, essentially, and tell the league what's going on. But what I wonder is, and maybe we can ask him, you know, when this happened, is can they make the call on March 16th? Because the league year didn't open until March 18th, right? They're not allowed to actually make a trade. So do they call and say, hey, put this on hold and we'll announce it? Or do they have to actually wait to make that official call to the league? I'm not sure. But all those mechanics have to be in play. And it sounded like, to me, this was just him dealing with the Vikings and saying, okay, you know, I'm going to call them and find out. They had already done their recon. He said they dug in, they did their recon. Terrence Gray, the Bills director of college scouting, was in Minnesota when they drafted Diggs for the first couple years of Diggs' career. It sounded to me, guys, that Brandon Bean had all of that done already. All it took was for him to basically decide between him and the Vikings what he was going to give up, and that would probably take a phone call or a text, probably a phone call to go back and forth. And maybe he says, guys, I'm going to sign Emmanuel Sanders here. If you don't want to make this deal, that's fine. I got to know, though, so that I can move on. Maybe that happens in this situation.
So what else, if we've exhausted the Diggs situation, what else stands out from this hour-long conversation with the Bills GM sale?
Well, a lot of it was just about the things that are going on right now, guys, which is how everything is going to be handled. And you know, he made a comment. He said, look, I don't know what they're going to tell us to do. I'll draft from my car if I have to. Like, if that's what has to happen, that's what has to happen. Yeah. I think one thing that, you know, people need to know is the teams don't know anything right now. You know, it's not like there's some ultra secret plan that the rest of us aren't clued in. I mean, Brandon Bean is like, I don't know what's going to happen. We don't know. And what they're doing is, behind the scenes, they are having scenarios play out. They're actually going through with Sean McDermott, with their staff, with their coaches. They're going over all the different scenarios for the draft, the offseason approach, training camp. They're thinking about this. And again, as we all know that these guys seem very organized, they're trying to cover all their bases before we know. So a lot of it was about those kinds of things. He did touch on several different players that they brought in through free agency. He said the light went on for Vernon Butler, and they feel he's a very good fit in this defense. He called Tyler Matakevich an ass kicker in special teams, you know, the guy that they got from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he kind of touched on those guys as well. And then the other thing was about Stephon Diggs. He was asked about the perception of Diggs, and he even said, look, I know that wide receivers sometimes are called divas, and I know that there are some things that he would probably want back if he could have over again. And then he said, there's a misnomer out there that we're looking just for choir boys. We're not. We're looking for professionals. And he said that he thinks Diggs is going to fit in just fine with the Bills, given what they know about him and the recon that they've done.
And he has, I assume, not been here yet.
I don't think so, Mike. I haven't seen anything on social media from him. I don't think the team would publicize that or we would know in any way, but it just seems like with what's going on, that's not the case. I mean, even these guys, I mean, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, everybody, they're pretty much home, probably not at the office even as much. So it's not like Stephon Diggs is going to have anything to do if he gets up here to Buffalo. Maybe he's been in touch with realtors or something, but I don't think he's been here.
But does he have to pass a physical, and has he done that? Anything like that?
That's a great question. And every team is doing it differently, and we do not know what the Bills are doing right now in this regard. But yes, you generally have to pass a physical for the trade to ultimately go through. Some teams are having independent doctors do it. Some teams are, if they can have a guy there at the facility, somehow, some way do it. But now, I guess there's some movement for doctors not to be able to do that because they're worried about, you know, what could happen if they're in contact with these guys. So everybody's got their own way. Anything that I know of right now, I'm not sure. I don't think he's been up here to do a physical, and I'm not really sure if the Bills have done anything with any independent doctors or anything medically with him other than that.
Sal, did anything regarding the subject of contract extensions for players that are already on the team, Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, anything like that come up?
Yes, absolutely it did. Matt Milano, Deion Dawkins, they were mentioned. And, you know, he said, I'd love to sign all of our guys back. You really would. But that's not how it works in this business. You only get so many dollars. And he said that Deion and Matt are guys that they'd obviously love to have. Tre'Davious White, they'd love to have him. You know, they want to have all their guys. And what they've done is they built a team and they built an organization where they keep those guys. He said, but you also have to remember that some players, they just want to stay here. They want to get things done. And then some players say, I want to hit free agency. I want to know what my market is. So he wouldn't get into any like specifics on any of these guys. But I think he kind of set us up for, hey, don't be surprised if we can't get all these guys done and we get to a point where one of them becomes a free agent or so. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen there, but I know that he feels strongly about trying to keep as many guys as he can, but he also knows that's not the reality.
All right, Sal, what else are you doing today?
This is pretty much it today. Although we just had a 680-something piece Lego set delivered to the house today for Max to go to the hockey arena that he found online.
Nice, nice.
It's a hockey arena. He wanted the there was a specific Sabres arena he wanted, but the company that made that does not do it anymore. They went out of business. They don't have the official license anymore. But we found a general NHL one, but it's got all, he's got Connor McDavid, it's got Carey Price, and that's really cool. And he's putting the guys together. I'm helping him put the rink together. This thing is big, and it's going to take a while, but it's pretty
good.
Cool.
Yeah, that's
awesome. And is it an actual Lego kit, or is it some other brand?
It's called Oyo Sports, but I believe it's Lego. I mean, there's nothing that looks to me like it's anything other than Lego, but yeah, it's really cool. And I didn't realize it came with all these players. It came with all the stickers from all the teams, basically.
Oh, neat.
And like I said, it's got, I think maybe Austin Matthews in it. There's a Maple Leaf in there. I know McDavid's in there. Here, I will tell you, there was a mistake, though. Carey Price has a C on his jersey. And he goes, Dad, it says he's the captain. I'm like, I don't think Carey Price is the captain, though. There's no way. So yeah, I looked at images of Carey Price. I looked up Carey Price, and I'm like, I know you could do that, but it's not. And yeah, they actually have Carey Price. His jersey on the Lego actually has a C for the captain.
The only reason I asked about the brand is because in my experience, my Lego building heyday, mostly with Leo, but a little bit with Owen too, whatever the other, like the off-brand Legos was, and I forget the name now, I just always found the instructions to be the littlest bit misleading. Whereas the Lego instructions were always extremely thorough and never confusing. I always thought they did a great job, Lego, with those booklets. Whereas the other ones were a little like, this piece looks like that piece. Which one is this? I don't even know. I'll try this one. And then you spend another hour and realize that was the wrong piece. And you got to go back and take a bunch of stuff apart.
Then that's what this is, because I just had that just before I looked at the time. I go, oh, my God, I got to go on the radio, because I was actually getting frustrated with a couple things I put together wrong to help them for that very reason. So that's exactly what's going on right now.
Yeah, this can be a big area. Like Nerf is what I think of first. If it's not the brand, there can be a stigma. It's good if he doesn't care. You know, because there can be a stigma. Like the other, my son has had two or three Nerf gun parties, like birthday parties, and there's one kid who might not have Nerf. He's just got it, and they can't use the same bullets. And it's like, right. Oh, that you know, Jonathan has Acme gun,
right.
Not a Nerf gun, and it's probably just fine. And the parents are digging it because it's probably cheaper, but you know how that can be.
Yep.
Good luck, though. It sounds pretty good. I want to do the big Lego thing. At our house, Legos, in these moments, Sal, when it's like we're trying to have a school day here, but we have work to do, we have what we call creative time. That can be drawing or music or something, and the Legos have become included. Like the kids play well together with the Legos, so we'll take it.
Right.
You know, there are times when we're counting Lego building as school.
Yeah, I
will take a picture when I'm done. I'll take a picture and show you guys this thing.
I definitely want to see it, and I want to, because it's come up, and like I don't know when Legos will come up again, but I don't know, we're gonna be here a while probably, so
it
probably will come up again. But let me just squeeze this in, because it's a hockey / tanking / Lego point. I think Mike, you might have been at this game. There's a game in the tank here in Florida, and it's an Saturday afternoon game. and it's on in our living room. Leo and I are at the dining room table with a massive Star Wars Lego set. And I'm spending my Saturday. Yes, there's probably whiskey there, but I'm building this giant set with Leo, and I've got the game on in the other room. And the Sabres score. I don't think they take a lead, but maybe they tie the game, whatever. But they score, and I swear. And Leo looks at me and goes, "Why are you mad the Sabres scored?" And I said, "It's kind of complicated." And I explained to him that, like, we're in this spot where the lower they finish, the better player they may be able to get in the draft, so we're kind of rooting for them to lose. And he just looked at me. I mean, and I've had maybe a dozen sports conversations with this kid in 16 years, okay? And this is one of them, so I remember it. He sort of looks at me and tilts his head and goes, "Wait until Owen hears about this." I'm just like, I know, I'm sorry, you know, it's just how it is. And I don't remember how that conversation went with Owen. But anyway, it was a funny moment with Leo and myself.
Legos involved, Lego story.
Right.
Thank you, Sal. Talk to you next time.
Okay, guys, thanks.
All right, Sal's appearance, as always, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Next up, Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz stops by to talk COVID-19 and sports and life in Erie County. We'll do that after the update. Mike Shope and the Bulldog, this is WGR.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.